Hello, everyone, and welcome to Season 5 of Goddamn GameCube. If you like our show, please leave us a rating on Spotify and subscribe on YouTube. Thank you, and enjoy today's episode. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Goddamn GameCube. Greg and Riley are your hosts today. We are continuing with the spooky month theme. Today, we are talking about the 2005 game Fear, First Encounter Assault Recon. Riley, take it away. Let's do it.
Yes, sir. So this game is a FPS psychological horror game developed by Monolith Productions. I believe they were recently behind the, I don't know how many of the same people are involved, those Shadow of Mordor games.
Yeah, that's right. It is the same people.
And published under Vivendi Universal Games, which was under Sierra at the time. Big kind of 90s LucasArts competitor. This was released in 2005 for the PC. Came out for the 360 in 2006 and the PlayStation 3 in 2007. This game is named for the unit, which is, it's a little ridiculous, I think, First Encounter Assault Recon, which is a elite squad of soldiers that is deployed to investigate and neutralize paranormal threats.
I actually have that in my notes as well. Like, the name is really actually kind of stupid.
Yeah.
Like, how do you assault and recon at the same time? Those are different. I guess, yeah. They do both.
Yeah, both. Yeah,
they do both.
I don't know.
They recon first,
they really
assault
had to
later.
Make the acronym work. So yeah, it's like, I don't know.
Honestly, it's like better than I could have done, I guess.
Sure,
it's not bad.
Sure. So this particular mission commences when a private military group called ArmorCam loses control of their top operative. His name is Paxton Fettle, a psychic, I guess, who takes control of the company's army of clones. We got some Attack of the Clone stuff going on here.
Yep.
And seizes control of their facility. So you control Fear's newest member, who is referred to merely as Point Man, I believe, who experiences visions of a young girl who is constantly causing mass destruction, flames, and just portentous imagery. So I wanted to ask you, because I missed this when it came out. What were your initial experiences like with this game? You played it when it came out?
Yes. So I played this game in early high school. I think it was 2007. Mm-hmm. I was like 14.
Yeah.
It was one of the first-person shooters I played. Like, I got into first-person shooters right around the Xbox Live era, like 06, 07.
Yeah.
And I was getting into horror games at the time, too. So my first experience with this game was I really liked it a lot, and yeah, I actually found it very difficult.
Yeah,
because especially when I'm 13, 14, haven't played very many FPS games, this game comes at you fast.
It does.
And I think something that we're going to talk about over the course of the episode is this game, I find it interesting for a lot of reasons, but one of them is it rips and it's very fast paced, but
yes,
it's also a horror game. And it's rare that those two things come together well.
Yeah.
Typically, when we make fun of that kind of thing, like when Resident Evil gets too shootery,
right,
we don't like it. But in this game, it handles both things really well.
Yeah, I think, and also there's a lot of kind of tools at your disposal, so there's some decision making as well. With that in mind, I did want to ask you, this time around, were the controls comfortable for you?
So I think this game, the one problem I have with this game, I only have a handful, in terms of the controls, I always had an issue with like the leaning system.
Yes.
Like there is a way to like lean around corners and not actually walk around them, but I feel like I don't have enough hands to do it.
Yeah,
like, I believe on a 360 controller, it's one of the D-pad buttons. So you're trying to aim with the right stick, move with the left stick, and lean with the right D-pad. And I'm like, I don't think this is possible.
Yeah, it's. I was curious how it handled on a controller, because on the keyboard, it was still kind of, I was like stretching my hand. Like, I think it's cool that there's all these different things you can use at your disposal, like leaning and the other stuff we're going to get into. But it was just like a little too, I don't know if what would have made it better, like button combo.
Perhaps it should have been like the B button or something.
So, just like radial stuff going on.
So like if you hold down a button, you lean.
Yeah.
Depending on what direction you're walking. I don't know.
Yeah. There was a little bit of a stretch for the controls in places, but overall it handled just fine. I would say it can be argued that the most notable gameplay feature is the reflex time. I'm not sure if you agree with that.
Yeah, I think we have to kind of go back to 2005, 2006.
Yeah.
Like slow-mo time and bullet time has been done to death now. Like, it's been done forever.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to recall a game before this that did it, and I can't at the moment.
Only the Matrix game itself, Enter the Matrix,
yeah,
is the only thing you could use, because this is basically that, where you have a limited but renewable resource where you're... It's intended to simulate that your character has like super fast reflexes,
yep,
and everything around you slows down, but you have normal speed, essentially.
And I think it actually works really well in this game too, where it looks cool and feels cool, and it's not too overpowered because it recharges really slowly.
Yes.
But it's also really vital because you can get wiped out in this game in a couple of seconds.
Yeah.
If you find yourself in a poor spot.
It's really, I think you're rewarded for learning how to, you know, what the best time to deploy it is and everything.
Yeah.
I think that's a good way to handle it. Huge variety of firearms, but you can only carry up to 3 weapons at a given time. I wanted to ask you, what were your favorites and least favorites of these?
Sure. So I think you always have to have the G2A2 with you, which is the main assault rifle.
Oh, yeah.
Because you always have to have something at range. Now, I was thinking about this, actually, and I researched this a little bit. I wasn't anticipating that question. I was researching what quote-unquote professional players use for this game, because people speedrun this game a lot. They also, the multiplayer was popular at one point.
Right.
What people say is that the shotgun is not something you should use, but if you're a new player, it's really fun to use.
Yeah.
So I always had it with me. I think the 3 main weapons for me, you have to have the G2A2 for range, the shotgun for the oh shit moments, and I don't remember the exact name. It's like the particle beam or something. What was that called?
Yeah, it's like a sniper weapon almost.
It's a sniper weapon, but it turns people into bones.
Yeah.
Like, it like vaporizes people.
Love
I think
that.
It's the particle beam.
Yeah, that sounds like a good loadout.
What
there.
Was yours?
I didn't love the way that the assault rifle felt. So I kind of just picked that up in like emergencies.
Yep.
I really was into the that like rivet gun. It's like a nail gun.
It's almost like the needler, right?
Yeah. Well, it's just like it pins
it,
dudes
it
up
pins
against
people
walls
to the
and
wall.
Stuff.
Yep.
And that, I mean, that's a great addition to any game. But I loved love the way
it's. Although
sounded.
I think it's called the Penetrator, isn't it?
I think so.
I don't know
like the number,
yeah,
designation or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I thought that the shotgun was fun to use, but it didn't have a lot of range.
No.
So it really kind of encouraged you to switch it up.
What did you use?
I liked the pistol a lot.
The dual pistols are really effective. You just don't find a lot of ammo for it.
You don't. I mean, it just felt great to even just use the one pistol, which I feel like is a make or break in a shooter for me.
Yeah.
If the pistol doesn't feel good, I'm not having a good time.
Do you know what? Now that we're on the gun topic,
yeah,
do you know what I think is a positive of this game? And it's a little bit surprising to me. It's a 2005 game and the guns sound really good.
Oh, they sound fucking incredible.
They sound really good. And especially right off the bat, when you shoot the handgun, it's like, whoa.
Yeah, that's I think the moment where I appreciated, I was like, okay, this, because I'm a little burnt out on shooters at this point, but the sound design really like kind of clicked it into place for me.
It's interesting that you say that. I think, do you ever get in these mindsets where you're a little bit burnt out of shooters, but you're kind of looking for the next good one?
Yeah.
Like, because I haven't played a good FPS in a while. It feels like since the mid 2000s, they don't come along very often.
No.
And I think, because I played this game in 2006 or 7, and when I replayed it like a month ago, and you know, this is 2023.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, this game still sounds really good. Like, I'm like, wow, these guns really punch.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of all of them. Did you utilize explosives much during this playthrough?
Yeah. So I think what I do is I use grenades and explosives against the enemies that are made of metal, like almost like the little robots or mech units.
Yeah.
I toss explosives at them.
And like the heavier like juggernaut guys.
Yep.
It's pretty cool. I like how you can, they don't give you much time to plan for the encounters, but if you use like the remote detonation stuff, it helps a lot. There is also some melee combos that can instantly take down enemy soldiers when you use them correctly.
Hell yeah.
What, you like these?
So I remember when I was in high school, I played a lot of the multiplayer.
Yes.
And so the multiplayer is gone now on Xbox. But what was so funny was you can slide kick and jump kick people and you one hit kill them.
It's really funny.
I think what's really funny about it is the melee is really pointless because you have thousands of rounds of ammunition and you always have plenty. But if you want to run at someone and jump and kick them, you will kill them.
Yeah. It's very, because you do like multiple kicks in one go, like the bicycle kick.
It's awesome.
It's very funny. Do you share the criticism of this game that the enemy variety is too limited?
So I did until you and I talked about how simplicity is one of this game's strengths.
Yeah.
So I think, is the enemy variety too small? Maybe. But I think this game is interesting where the enemy variety is really based on what weapons people have. Yeah. It's not really, I mean, how many enemies are there? There's
like five.
There are like two kinds of mech guys, regular people and clones. And then we'll talk about the end where there's some weird stuff.
Yeah.
But there's really only four or five enemies. But I think because you can get wiped out so fast, when you hear enemies talking over radio, you're just ready to go.
Yeah. I think because the way that it feels so good to fight like just the normal like replica soldiers. It's just like just more of that. I love it. It's like fighting the Covenant in Halo. It's just like this is clearly like the best enemy in this game. It's all built around this, so I really enjoy it. I also like those like ninja guys that appear at one point.
Oh yeah, the guys who are jumping off the walls.
Yeah.
Okay, I thought that was really weird, but that is kind of a shotgun moment.
Yeah.
Where like they get up in your face, you slow down time, and you fire away.
Yeah, because that's they move so fast. It really helps if you know how to use it. I did appreciate. I think there are some significant spikes in difficulty in this game, but about 2/3 of the way in, I think it like really ratchets up. Did you experience that? Like,
so
it's like I need to take this a little more seriously
this time around. Actually, not really, but I'm a little bit biased because I've played it before.
Yeah.
So I remember this game being difficult when I was a kid. So I was really ready to play it at 100% every time I turned it on.
Right.
So I know what you're talking about, though. Like, there are really two specific spots where you land on a helipad and enemies are
that
already shooting
tough.
At you.
Yeah.
And so I think what's actually unfair about, I think that's mission 4.
Yeah.
I think what's unfair about that moment is you're left off with your status and ammo from mission 3.
Yeah.
It's not reloaded for you.
Right.
So if you left yourself in a bad spot, the start of 4 is really hard.
Yeah.
There's also a part, I think it's either in 7 or 8, where you have to fight a couple of mech guys in a row and then enemies have the particle beam.
Yes.
And so, but it's all together.
Yeah.
And it's like, Jesus.
Yeah. You have to be very save scummy with it.
Maybe. And like some of the mech enemies that come at you with rocket launchers.
Yeah.
You have to really know how to position yourself or it's going to be game over really fast.
There's a specific part like in a parking garage. I don't know if you remember this. And it's just like, oh my God, it's relentless. But it was pretty cool. It wasn't like, it didn't get to the point of being annoying for me.
No.
So I did want to ask you with that in mind, what you think of the enemy AI in this game.
So back in the day, the enemy AI was one of the selling points of the game.
Yeah.
Where the enemies, it's interesting, where they let you in on it a little.
Right.
The enemies, you actually hear their radio chatter.
Yes.
They'll ask each other to check in, what's your position? You know, when they're yelling about you, they'll say, go around him.
Yeah.
Or when they'll actually like say stuff like, oh, he's eliminated my whole squad. You know, I need help. You know, that sort of thing.
Yes.
So it was very touted as a selling point of the game.
Yeah.
I think I read online, some people were debating this on Reddit, where they said the enemy AI is quote unquote good, but it's always the same. So if you understand enemies are just going to go around you, if you go around, you're going to find the right way to kill them.
Sure.
Like if you make a wide path, they're going to do the same.
Yeah.
I don't know if you have any thoughts.
No, I think for the time, I think it was very impressive. Because I keep in mind that it's a 2005 game, and I think it was just it there was a little bit more thought than I thought there would be, you know.
Like, I will say this though, enemies do a very good job of not exposing themselves to you just lighting them up in a hallway. They are going to take cover and not expose their head or body.
Yeah,
they do a pretty good job with that.
They are a little bit more clever than I was expecting.
They do a good job with throwing grenades at you.
Like
when you're in a tight corner and grenade
to flush you out,
and grenade like, explosion range is very is like, as far as I remember, grenade explosion range is very long. It's very wide,
yes.
And you can get one hit by them in a large range.
Yeah.
So
I think this game is also a little bit of like kind of the glass cannon thing where you can't take a lot of hits, but they can't either.
Yeah.
Until
exactly.
you get to like those later enemies. But that's something that I really liked about it. And with that said, I do really enjoy the banter. I think it's going to be the thing that I remember the most about this game, because it's kind of, this game plays a little closely to Half-Life 2, and these guys kind of remind me of the Combine.
I think this is one of the, I call them the quote-unquote Half-Life influence games of that time.
For sure. But it is very, it sets itself apart, and these guys do too. I just love like all the no fucking way! Oh my god. It's weird, because they're supposed to be clones, but whatever. So I wanted to ask you also, while the levels, I would say, are well-designed, I think their appearance is pretty drab a lot of the times.
I think one of the big minuses of this game is the environments are all the same.
Yeah.
Like, I am going to... I don't think that's too harsh for this game where, okay, there are technically 10 or 11 missions, but they could all be the same.
Right.
Like, you're in an office building, then a sewer, then another office building, then another sewer... And then you go to a parking garage, which is still ugly.
Yeah.
You're in an apartment that looks like an office building. Like, they're all the same.
I think the only parts that stood out are when you're outdoors and you see, like, the nighttime city and stuff.
I'm surprised they didn't do a little bit more of that. Yeah. It could be a limitation of 2005.
It could have been.
But also, I want to say this, too. The levels are really well designed, and there's... I don't want to go too far off this one topic, but I think what's a positive of this game, the levels are... traversable in a couple of different ways more than you would think.
Yes.
Like, there are ways to, like, go through, I don't know, sewer grates, air conditioning ducts, ways to get around. And we should bring this up too before we get away from gameplay. There are upgrades in this game. Like, you can upgrade, it's very simple. You can upgrade your maximum health and your maximum
reflex
time by finding blue and green syringes.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of them to find. Yeah. I miss a lot of them every time, and I thought I traversed the game really thoroughly.
Yeah.
And I think that it's interesting where the environments are boring, and it's not a positive of the game, but they are well designed.
Yeah, I found just a lot of little... pass where it rewards you for exploring, you know, in a slightly different way, where, you know, even if you don't find one of those, like, just general, like, ammo pickups or health pickups or whatever, just little, like, encouragements.
Also, like, I can't think of another game at the moment where your health and your shields are a number. Like, is that would also be like
that was
Doom,
a Half-Life
Doom
thing as
Half-Life
well.
Like, I'm trying to think games since then. There isn't a lot of it.
They don't do that much anymore.
No, it's almost
a meter.
It's kind of like a game of its time in a way.
Very, yeah. Where you have to physically restore it.
Yep.
It doesn't just recharge on its own.
One last thing about, you know, the gameplay loop. I do think it's awesome how if you get close to something, you pick it up.
Yeah.
It really helps the game stay fast.
Yes, definitely. I did want to ask you visually, in other respects, what do you think has held up well and what hasn't?
The bullet time looks good.
I agree with that.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a 2005 game. It's one of these sort of awkward games where it was a PC game in 2005 and it was an early 360 game where it kind of looks like it could have been a regular Xbox game, except the physics are better.
Right.
Right. And it kind of hits that awkward line where I think Gears of War surpassed it. Like, okay, Gears of War, that looks like a new gen game. Fear kind of looks like a past gen game.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think one little detail I wanted to mention that I picked up on, when you shoot through something, there's a lot of, like, dust and debris that hangs in the air afterwards.
Yeah.
It looks great. It's like, you don't see that every time.
And something I want to bring up, I'm glad you brought that up, was sometimes if you do too much shooting, you have to stop because you can't see.
Yeah.
Like, there's so much bullet smoke and so much dust and debris flying around, you have to move.
It's awesome. I feel like, because I think the consensus between you and I is that this game fucking rips.
Yes.
And it's like... the gameplay and all these little details are the reason why. Like, it's just, you're very involved.
You had a really funny point where you said, I was kind of checking in with you, hey, how do you feel about this game? And you said, I love it. You're just fighting dudes the whole time.
It's dudes fighting dudes.
There's dudes fighting dudes.
No BS.
No.
Just you know, that may be a detriment if you want to be more involved in the story. But I was going to say also, you know, the fidelity of the human characters, you know, it's a very of its time, not necessarily a bad thing. They look like 2005, like human NPCs.
It's kind of the awkward gen transition.
Yeah,
for sure.
But I did really want to highlight, I mean, despite... I think Alma, who is the young girl central to all this, I think she is, like, instantly very iconic.
Yes.
Despite some similarities to kind of the Ring girl
with the hair. I forgot that movie came out at, like, the same time. Was that the same year? It was close.
A couple years before.
Yeah.
But they were influenced by movies like that. I think it's a very, because that's what you associate with this game,
sure.
I feel like. I think getting back into kind of like the auditory a little bit.
Yeah.
What did you think of the music of this game?
I don't want to go into the story right now, but do you know what really jumps out to me?
What?
Is the really strange like woodwind theme where that one annoying character has.
Yes.
It's almost like this game is interesting where it has this atmosphere of being very not badass, but we know we're a cool game doing cool stuff.
Yeah.
And they have these, I would say, these well-done moments of irony that you don't really expect.
Little contrast sections.
Yep. And then it's like this game gets... I think this game's sense of humor is more clever than I remember.
Yeah.
Like,
no, completely.
In terms of like other audio besides guns, I'm assuming you had other points.
No, I just want... I mean, I think that a lot of the soundtrack is not necessarily memorable, but it serves the atmosphere.
Sure.
Like, it kind of blends in with the sound effects.
It's a lot of bloops and bleeps and heartbeat sounds.
Yes. I don't know. So I wanted to, before we get into story, ask you an important question. I mentioned heavily inspired by movies like The Ring, Japanese and Korean horror films. Do you find this game scary? And if so, why?
Yes. So I was going to bring this up later, but it's a good time to do it now.
Yeah.
So like I've said throughout the episode, I played this as a kid, 13 or 14, and I also played it at 30. And I think what I think is so clever about this game is it is a paranormal shooter, but you don't shoot at any paranormal stuff until the last 10 minutes, which we'll talk about later.
Yeah.
So that is so cool to me where they set this game up as, I don't know if contrast is the right word or juxtaposition is the right word. It might not be either of those words, where we are a fast-paced, ripping shooter, but you're not shooting monsters.
Right.
You're shooting quote-unquote real people and clones that look like real people.
Yeah.
So the horror comes at moments when you're not doing that.
Yeah.
That is so fucking interesting to me, and I rarely see that in games. I don't know if I've seen it done again.
No.
So, and the reason why I find this scary, should I bring up a few moments right now?
Sure.
So there is one iconic scare in this game, and I can't believe it's missable.
Yeah.
So
I missed it.
You missed it, and yeah. I only saw it as a kid. There's one moment where you're sliding down a ladder, and if you look in a certain direction, the little girl is in your face, like she's in like a sewer grate looking at you, and it's like, oh my god, what the fuck?
Yeah.
But like, you're not shooting anything at that time.
Right.
It's like, it's just dark. There's not much happening. You're essentially waiting for the next shooting section.
Yeah.
There's also some really cool subtle stuff that I did not encounter as a kid because I probably didn't have the level of patience as a 13-year-old.
Yeah, definitely.
So there are some really cool moments. I'm not sure if you caught this. There are several moments where you can look at a CC camera, like a closed caption camera or security footage.
Yeah.
If you wait long enough, Paxton Fettel will walk by.
Oh,
he
really?
Will be on camera, or the little girl will walk by.
Oh, that's cool.
But you have to sit long enough to watch it, and sometimes he'll look at the camera.
Oh, that's great.
It is very cool. There's also, we should bring this up too, this game does something very, very cool. It's also really annoying, but it does benefit the game. You can turn on a flashlight you have a headlamp,
yeah.
But it slowly runs out of battery and has to recharge.
Yeah.
So you are walking through darkness a lot, and mm-hmm. you have to really balance when to turn it on, and enemies notice if you turn it on or off.
Yeah, flashlight.
Yes, very cool.
Yeah.
But like, back to the scary moments, I was going to bring this up at the beginning, when you were talking about the main villain, quote unquote, Paxton Fettel.
Yes.
I always thought his name was cool.
Yeah.
Like, I always feel like villain names are stupid.
It reminded me of Sebastian Vettel.
Yeah.
The German race car driver.
I always thought his name was cool. And what I really thought was, like, he kind of looks like a vampire. He also just, like, I feel like he's just monstery enough where you know he's bad, but I understand how he is human,
yeah,
as well.
He's like a fucked up looking guy.
Yeah.
And he's never really, he doesn't really physically appear until much later.
Right. And what I want to say too is you don't fight him. Like,
right.
You don't, before you go on to your next point, the original question was, do you find this game scary?
Yeah.
I find this game scary because the game does such a good job of saying you are the fear squad. You fight paranormal threats. You actually don't
right.
throughout the entire game.
Yeah. That's a great point. It's true. I think it wasn't like overtly scary to me, but I felt on edge the whole time. You know, I think it builds the atmosphere very well. It's just there's a lot of lonely moments where
yes.
You're not really talking to anybody or hearing any radio chatter. And it's a lot of it kind of reminded me of the film Aliens, where it's like they're going after. It's a very all the Delta Force dudes. It's very hoorah. Let's go kick some ass. And they just get instantly fucking like wiped out, like vaporized. Mm-hmm. And it's a very like humbling moment because the game almost presents itself a little bit like a Call of Duty or something, something similar to that. And it's instantly kind of the rug is pulled out from under you.
I don't know if you were going to bring this up later, but do you know what I also find kind of scary in this game was how most of the backstory is told through you pick up answering machine messages or you listen to messages on a computer. But I always had a lot of anxiety about clicking it because the game is so dark and enemies hear what you're doing.
Yeah.
So I'm like, should I listen to this voicemail right now? Is Paxton Fettel around the corner? Is the little girl watching me do this? Should I really spend this time to stand here and listen to this?
Yeah.
Because you're in like these totally dark office buildings with a flashlight.
Yeah.
Should I listen to this? Maybe I shouldn't.
Not even the supernatural stuff, because I felt like that was kind of, baked in. Like,
yeah.
Where it's like those are happening at set moments. I was concerned about, and I think this can happen, if the area is not secure of like enemy soldiers, like they can just walk in on you while you're listening to one of those, which is great. And I did find myself looking for them, whereas I feel like now it would be such like a collectible or achievement hunt. Like I would just not want to start at all. The gameplay and is really at the forefront and the narrative is kind of at the back. So they don't really give you much, and then you're kind of compelled. I want to know what's going on. Like, I want to seek these out.
This game, I'm not accusing them of doing a bad job. I almost think they fell ass backwards into a good story. where it turns out better than what they were writing.
Yeah.
Where what I mean is like, your objective is always eliminate Fettel, right? It's like they never give you anything else to do, but you never like it takes so long to get to that point where you're always like, what am I doing? I'm just fighting soldiers. I'm in another office building, but there's a little girl and it's really scary. And why are we doing this?
Yeah.
And they give you so little to go on, but the shooting is fun. And for some reason, it's good. I feel like for any other game, I would say it's bad, where they're giving me nothing to go on.
Yeah, I would say also that the dialogue is very mature. Like, it feels like how adults talk.
I would say for the most part.
Okay.
Well, actually, you said it's how adults talk, and I would say adults aren't always, like,
mature.
There are some pretty iconic voice messages, actually.
Do you have any in particular?
Okay, some of them are not appropriate. I'll give one of the, let's call it not exactly appropriate. One where someone is like yelling at someone, you better be ready for the ass fucking of the century.
It would not probably show up in a game these days, but it is very unfiltered, we'll say.
Yeah, what I think is like, is that appropriate? No, but could I imagine like a 40 or 50 something year old office worker screaming
an executive at a defense contractor? Of course.
Yes. Yeah, screaming that at someone else with something to do with finances and money and secret government projects.
Yeah,
probably.
Absolutely. So do you have anything else before we get into story?
No, let's do it.
OK, so I don't have much because the story is very, very simple.
Mm-hmm.
If you have anything to contribute in between these points, please interrupt.
Yeah, go ahead. I've got a little, but why don't you start?
So at the start, your team consists of yourself, Point Man, your commander, Rodney Betters, Sergeant Spencer Jankowski, which I would like to mention is a law firm in Dedham, Massachusetts, Jankowski and Spencer.
Dude, so he held up okay after this.
Yeah, he did. He did well. And your tech officer, Jin Soon Kwan. And you are in pursuit of this guy, Paxton Fettel.
Love his name.
Paxton Fettel. So you're in this kind of preliminary facility where all this stuff went down, and you begin to experience visions of Fettel offering you kind of some cryptic clues and ominous appearances of this young girl in a red dress named Alma. So I wanted to ask you, when you first played this, did you have any inkling of what was really going on here? And
No.
What did you think was happening?
So what... I then again, so you and I have beaten it, so we know what actually is going on. Yeah. At the beginning, how they set the story up is like, you are here to eliminate Paxton Fettel because Paxton Fettel is some kind of psychic who is controlling these clone soldiers. And if you eliminate Fettel, the soldiers stop.
Right.
So the plot that is given to you is the replicas are going to get out and kill people. We got to stop this guy.
Yeah.
Kind of a military plot. And so, but when you start seeing the visions of the little girl, I'm like, is Paxton Fettel showing me this? Like, is someone kind of fucking with you in some way to scare you from doing something? Or
yeah.
You don't really know. The game gets way crazier than that.
Right.
But at the beginning, all I thought was, this guy is controlling soldiers. We have to kill him. There's a little girl that in my vision, perhaps she's someone in my past, or maybe he's showing me her
right.
for some reason.
Yeah, I was pretty unclear. Obviously I figured both of them were going to play into the plot. I did not have like a clear picture of how. There's not a lot that happens narratively in this early section when you're at this remote other facility. Before long, you are transferred to the headquarters, the ArmaCam headquarters. Your fellow Jankowski goes missing and he's never seen again.
Yeah, he opened a law firm.
He decided, he had better things to do. And this is where that like Delta Force team gets absolutely just wiped.
Yeah.
That part is tough, where you get out of the helicopter and everybody else is just mowed down. But
yep.
it is awesome. And the only survivor I did want to mention is Sergeant Douglas Holliday, who is voiced by David Scully. And this guy also voiced Sergeant Johnson in Halo.
Fuck
so
yeah.
That's all I could think of.
Let's go.
He's got a lot of great lines where you go up to him and he goes, "I heard you're a bad motherfucker. Is that true?"
That's right. That's that guy.
There's like a part where he's like trying to hit on the tech officer. And she's just like, "No, absolutely not." It's really funny.
You know what? Because I'll bring this up. In the Xbox 360 version, unfortunately, there were no subtitles.
Oh, really?
Big finger wag for me. I thought he said, "I heard you're a bad motherfucker. I hope it's true."
He says that.
Oh, that's that what he says?
I believe that's what he
okay.
says. Yeah. I did have subtitles, so that's a bummer. So yeah, you and you're basically speaking, or you're not speaking, but this guy Betters is speaking to you.
Is that the guy on your radio command?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you gain additional context about what's happening from various sources. You know, you mentioned the answering machines and the laptops you can hack into. And then you eventually run into a couple of the employees who work there. So number one is this guy, Aldous Bishop. He's like tied to the chair with the bombs on him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this guy, I thought that was like, I was like, I don't know what's going to happen here.
This is where this game gets very Half-Life-y,
yeah.
where it looks like a Half-Life or Counter-Strike escort mission.
Yes.
But it's very brief.
Yeah. And I thought it was kind of funny where if you leave him alone, like he'll wheel around by himself.
Yeah.
Just try to move. So you have to try and get him out of there. But very briefly afterwards, he just gets shot, like trying to escape in the helicopter. And the other guy you run into at this point is Norton Mapes.
We love and hate Norton Mapes.
Can we get some live Mapes thoughts on
Mike? So this is where I was talking earlier about this. This game has some moments of irony that you think aren't going to work, but they work, and they interject these small moments of levity into this very stressful game.
Yeah.
So I have in big capital letters, cheesy poos. Like, you know, his little snacks that he's eating.
Oh, is that what they're called?
They're called cheesy poos. So I zoomed in on the bags.
Wow.
So you know when Norton Mapes is around because he's into these essentially cheese puffs or like Cheez-It snacks called cheesy poos.
Yeah.
And you see a ton of bags scattered around.
Just lying on the floor.
And that's how you know he's close.
Yeah. And he has this weird little like oboe.
It's like a woodwind theme.
Yeah, it's like
double
very
reed
like
theme.
Sitcom-y.
Yeah.
He's essentially this boorish like hacker character, like kind of like Jurassic Park, like the bad guy. And I think we had some off mic discussion about him, where it was like the first time I met him, like seems trustworthy.
Yeah, exactly.
He's like very shady character, and he keeps fucking you over. And at a certain point, you get like a tip or something in between screens, and it's like it can now be assumed that he is actively harming your investigation.
I mean, it's really funny because he's technically a citizen. You can't just shoot him. Like,
you
have to be like, "No, we're getting you to safety." And he's like, "Hee-hee, you have to do this for me."
You see him like live camera footage of him running away with a cactus.
Yeah.
Like, what was that about? But So not a lot happens in this part narratively. I did want to ask you if you have any thoughts before we get to like the big reveal of do you have any other story beats you'd like to cover?
There's something going on behind the scenes here with have we gone to the point of like Harlan Wade and Alice Wade? And
this is where they start introducing
So there isn't, I think the middle of the game is actually where the story starts to be like, I think we're just shooting dudes. Like, yeah. I don't really know what we're doing.
Yeah.
There's something to do with someone in the story is trying to cover up the operation. Someone is trying to restart it.
Yes.
And you don't get very much, but that's kind of what's going on. Someone's trying to do a cover up and someone
Project
wants
Origin.
Exactly.
About.
Yep. So why don't we just continue, because there isn't much here.
No, it's mostly, like you said, the answering machines. You get some more context.
The cheesy poos.
The cheesy poos. You gotta... So Harlan Wade is a senior executive. He sounds like that Supreme Court guy. That's all I could think about.
Yeah.
Harlan Crow.
Yeah.
I was like... anybody with that name, I have a hard time trusting. But it's essentially revealed that... Alma, the little girl, is his daughter.
Yes.
And he submitted her to this program when she was 8 years old. And when she was 15, she was put in an induced coma and forced to give birth to these like prototype
psychic
soldiers or something.
Yep.
And it's really just this huge crime that has been covered up. And essentially, I think she has been put into stasis or storage.
She's actually like 26 or 27 at this point.
Yes.
Something like that.
I did think that was a good twist where you're not really...
There isn't a little girl haunting you necessarily. That's
just
from
the
memory.
Past.
It's the memory of her.
I think that's cool. It was a cool reveal.
Because you're looking at visions from 20 years ago.
Yes,
it's not just now.
Psychic echoes or whatever, however you want to look at it. And you experience another key vision of Fettel, who tells you that he is because there was two prototypes. Fettel was the second one, and then eventually it's, of course, you were the first.
You're the
one.
First. And you know what? It makes more sense than I give it credit for. Why can you slow down time?
Like,
why do you have reflex powers? Because you are one of the psychic prototypes.
Did you see anything like this coming?
No.
I didn't necessarily. I did think there was more to your character than met the eye, because they're very cagey about like, oh, he's our new recruit. It's kind of setting up that like BioShock sort of twist where,
but
you're
what I don't
involved.
Really, I think, I don't know if I don't want to spoil this right now, but what I don't really understand about the first game is, well, how did you get out of the facility and become a point man? Was it on purpose? Like, were you purposely released to grown up to be a soldier with psychic powers? Like, why did they let you out?
If you were
first
prototype, then why did... I think maybe I missed something.
Or like, you know what? Or maybe it's like, okay, you're the first prototype, but like that means someone knows that you and Paxton Fettel are brothers.
Right.
So why do you have to kill him? Is it because you're the only one capable? Is that maybe, did I just put it together? It's possible.
Maybe.
I think what's a little bit lost is how purposeful it is that you're there at that time.
Yeah.
It could be very purposeful that everyone's in on it, or it's just, it is. I don't know.
Yeah. I didn't get the sense that your intimate team members knew about it.
That's a good way to put it. I didn't get that sense either.
But maybe someone above was in charge. So you have this vision, this dream, I guess, where you shoot Fettel. And it's like you can't progress until you do.
Yeah, so it's interesting. You know what I love about this, too? This is what I call an ironic boss battle.
Yeah.
Where, well, we should set this up, where one of your objectives is you have to rescue Harlan and Alice Wade.
Yeah.
Because Fettel is going after them.
Yeah.
And so you actually do rescue Alice Wade, but she says, I need to get to my dad. And she does something stupid and drives off on her own.
Right.
And you try to get to her before Fettel kills her, but he ends up eating her, but you kill him as he's doing it.
Right.
So it's this interesting scene where there's no boss battle with Fettel. You have a psychic vision where you go up and shoot him in the head with a handgun and it's done.
I mentioned BioShock. It's kind of Andrew Ryan before Andrew Ryan. Almost a little bit. What I thought was really cool about this is that it renders all of the replicas like that you see afterwards just inert.
Yeah, I mean, it's so the story actually makes some sense where they say to you that your better says to you that if you eliminate Fettel, the replicas will stop.
Right.
So you shoot him in the head and then the gameplay afterwards reflects that.
Yeah. They're just standing there, which is great. So Harlan Wade is conspiring to release Alma from stasis or wherever she's been trapped for this, like in a coma or something. And he shoots our buddy Mapes in the process.
Because I think, is Mapes actually working for Genevieve Allstead or Armistead, right?
Like the CEO.
I believe Mapes and Genevieve are trying to cover it up. While yes. Marlon, where Harlan Wade is trying to let her out.
Yeah,
let
Alma out. It's his daughter. And
yeah, he probably has a lot of regret for doing this.
But everybody else is like, if you do, it won't. Because I think Alma is essentially controlling Fettel or like influencing him in some way.
And essentially she's so far gone that like this is like Stranger Things season 12, right?
Like it's just like it's going to be completely out of control if she gets out. So I was going to say,
what happens at this point is like, I'm okay that they did this, where Norton Mapes has a little bit of a redemption story, where essentially Harlan Wade shoots him and before he can cover it up, and Norton Mapes says, he almost has like a real dude moment with you. He's like, dude, this is fucked. You have to blow up the facility. Here's how you do it.
Right.
He said, I'm going to help you. Like, I was an asshole. I was here to do this.
Yes.
Like, I'm toast. Just please destroy this place.
Yeah. Yeah, that was
you get a little cool bro moment there.
Just a little redemption.
It would have been funny if he like ate a cheesy poo. That's South Park. Cheesy poo.
Should have given you his cheesy poo.
Or you should have given him one.
Health upgrade.
Yeah.
So this is kind of getting into the end game here, where when he releases her, my friend actually told me vaguely about, he didn't tell me who it happens to. He's like, yeah, there's a crazy death in this game where just a guy gets like lifted up and turned into I don't know, steak or something.
Bones. Yeah. Well, actually, if you think about it, it happens before where the Delta team, that happens to them, right?
Yes.
In Mission 2.
Very in like a dream or something.
Essentially Harlan Wade lets Alma out and she just vaporizes him,
just instantly.
Yeah.
And it's essentially, I guess, the only way to stop her, at least how they think, is to destroy the facility. This, your classic kind of
nuclear reactor,
self-destruct thing. And I didn't even know what was happening at this point. Or like, do I have to get out of the way when the big wall of like nuclear fire comes at you? I'm like, what am I supposed to do here? And I think you just inevitably get pushed towards the back. And like, you presumably survive thanks to like, you know, your genetic like alteration or whatever.
Well, we should talk about the escape, right? When it becomes a House of the Dead shooter.
Yes.
Which is really, so I was saying at the beginning of the episode, this game is very clever because you are a paranormal army squad, but you don't fight any paranormal creatures until the last 10 minutes. Essentially, when you set off the nuclear reactor and have to escape, you get these sequences of ghosts flying at you, and you're just lighting them up with dual handguns and submachine guns. They're just flying at you.
I didn't know what the fuck was happening there.
No, I'm just like, honestly, I don't know what the fuck that is, but
it happens that you intermittently get these visions of like a flaming like hospital hallway, presumably where they operated on Alma or whatever, and sometimes you have to defend yourself from these like
ghosts,
flaming ghouls or something, and they just all come at you at the end, and it's very
you just shoot thousands of rounds at ghosts. It's really weird.
Yeah, it reminded me of like the end of one of the Dead Space games or something. You know what I'm talking about? And I'm like, because I didn't know how much longer the game was going to go after this point. And it doesn't bother me that much because it's at the very
end. It's like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
They do a clever thing, though, where, remember I told you like at the beginning, it's clever how little flashlight power you have.
Yeah.
The end of the game is like completely dark.
Yeah.
And so you have to balance when to turn your flashlight on, because if the ghosts touch you, they do a ton of damage to you.
Yeah.
So you have to balance turning your flashlight on, mowing down ghosts and turning it off.
Right.
So it's okay. Like this House of the Dead shooting segment is like fine.
A little bit of decision making.
It's like
there.
It's like kind of like silly and stupid, but like it's fine.
It's at the very end. Who cares?
It's like,
right?
10 minutes.
And so you survive this blast somehow, and I think Sergeant Johnson comments on, I don't know how you got out of there.
Yeah.
But you get picked up by him and Jin. And what follows is what I would call incredibly scary, but also one of the funniest endings I've ever seen in a game.
Yeah.
Where, so you're on the helicopter surveying like the huge explosion and stuff. And it seems like, okay, this is it, wrapping up. And it's a little bit like the first Dead Space ending where there's one last little jump scare.
Yeah.
And it's her, like, Alma, like, clambering onto the helicopter.
Yeah, her climbing up into the helicopter.
It's like smash cuts to credits. It was, oh my God, I was laughing so hard.
Yeah, honestly, pretty effective.
Yeah, I was like, there she is. She somehow made it.
Do you know what I don't recall? What? The Alma that climbs the helicopter, is that adult or kid?
I believe she's the adult version.
I think you're right. And I don't think your squad mates notice, right? Or like she's only visible to you.
Well, because the power cuts at one point, they're like, what was that? And then she just shows up and that's...
Yep, and they cut to credits. Yeah,
they don't give you a ton of context.
Actually, there's one more bit of context.
Is there a post-credits?
Where Genevieve Armistead says over... I forget what her name is. Over the radio says, the prototype was a success.
Okay.
She's talking about you.
So it was on purpose that you...
So the mission, in some ways, they give you this little inference that perhaps you were there on purpose.
Right.
Yep. So it was... I think the phone conversation with Genevieve is someone is complaining how crappy the cover up was of the operation because it literally was a fucking explosion.
Yeah.
But then she said, yes, however, prototype one is a success, right, which is you.
So do you want to just kind of do about the story final thoughts here, how you felt everything was resolved? What do you think about the story overall?
It made more sense to me at 30 than at 14.
Yeah, I'll say this. I can see that.
I think the story is okay for what it is. I think it is fine. You know what it is? Is the story kind of ridiculous? Kind of. But they give you so little that they don't give themselves enough runway to screw it up. Like, I feel like so many games, I think I've used this word on the show, so many games get too sci-fi-y for me.
Yeah.
Or they just, what do we say, jump the shark? They do too much. This game does very little, and they give you just enough crazy where I'm okay with this.
And it takes itself just seriously enough, too.
Right. And also, like I said, they're okay, fine. I fibbed a little. There are some shooting segments where you shoot at Alma, but I think they're visions. They're not real.
Yeah.
So, like, you don't shoot paranormal stuff. You don't have boss fights with Alma. Like, they're just...
It's not like the focus.
No, it's really... And that could be the strength of the game, right?
Yeah.
Where I think, okay, strengths of the story in the game. It's simple. There aren't very many enemies. You shoot dudes the whole time. It's fun. Other strength... the paranormal and the shooting are disconnected.
Yeah.
So you don't... The gameplay and the story don't get nuts together. Not really. And you get just enough scares and just enough story where And you're right. It takes itself seriously enough where it's not silly.
Right.
I don't know what you think, if you have anything else.
No, I agree. I think there was actually one thought I had as the game was approaching the end, which I thought would have propelled it even further in like the this game is the shit direction, is that I thought when Paxton Fettel died, you were going to control the soldiers.
Oh.
And it would have been like a whole like another, you know, not to add like a huge... It probably would have been very tough to implement a whole gameplay thing.
They follow your orders because you're the prototype.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like you're the psychic. Yeah. So I thought that would have been cool. Another... a little missed opportunity there, but overall, yeah, it's a very humble story that doesn't get too crazy. They give you just enough. I wanted to briefly mention that Fear had a small handful of expansions and sequels, none of which seem to have been received as well as the original.
Oh yeah, I beat the second and third one.
So how do you feel about them?
They're not great.
I read the plot a little bit of them. They seem a little sensationalized. A little silly.
I think so. I mean, I'm not going to say too much about them. Like Fear 2 is what I would call fine, and Fear 3 is really dumb.
Okay.
I would say Fear 2 is, it really treads the line of, oh God, we had to make a sequel. How do we make it make sense enough? It's fine.
Yeah.
Like they essentially talk about Fear 2 is called Project Origin, the thing that they referenced in the first game. It's fine. Like, and the third one is like, you play as like both of the brothers and it's so stupid. Like, I don't really want to talk about it. Like, I'm all set.
Because usually we're pretty thorough, but I think the consensus for this series was the first one is really all that's worth experiencing. And, you know, I wanted to bring up, I mean, at the time, so I actually used to confuse this game with Killzone a lot.
Kind of similar era, similar
visuals and stuff. But it did stand out at the time, received a lot of critical and commercial success. But you don't really hear many people talking about it anymore.
It's one of these games where I think I've talked about this on the show. I talk about like the golden era of Xbox Live or like sort of the golden era of modern games. I think it's like 06 to 09 or 2010.
Yeah.
Like, and Fear is one of those games. And it's... I don't know if I would go as far to say this game is underrated or underloved, but it is now.
Yeah.
I think back in the day, people liked this game. I'm a little surprised more folks haven't played it.
Yeah.
I feel like this, you know what? This is an audio podcast, but I have my hand out right now. This game is teetering on, I might have called this an underrated gems game.
Right.
It teeters. Because at one point it was popular, but with who?
Right.
I'm not really sure.
No, and I think it, you know, it had a small footprint, but I do believe that it deserves to be experienced and remembered. Some modern players might find it quite dated, but I don't know. Like I said, it takes a lot for a shooter to really stick with me and kind of cut through my fatigue.
Mm-hmm.
And this game did that. I thought just strictly in terms of like gameplay and presentation, just very impactful stuff. Did you want to do a grade as we wrap here?
Yeah, before I give you my grade, I feel like the people who made Stranger Things love this game because it's like the same plot.
Oh, really?
It's like very similar. But anyway, like I won't make any more Stranger Things jokes. This game was way better. Anyway, so grades. This is, you know what? I'm teetering. Maybe you can convince me one way or another.
Okay.
I'm either going B plus or A minus here. I'm going high.
Okay.
How do you feel? Maybe we can like hash this out. I'm high, but how high?
How high?
What did you have? What was your initial thought? Throw it out there.
I think I'm going B plus.
You know what? I'm gonna go B plus if the environments were just more interesting and it wasn't, I'm playing the same thing 11 times.
Yeah.
I think I would have gone A minus, but there are some days where you could convince me this is A minus.
Yeah.
Like I'm right there.
It's, you
know,
a great production.
You know where I'm at? 89.
Yeah.
I'm at the, what I consider to be the best Metacritic grade you can get. Yeah. 89. Like you're right there. It's like right there. It's not universally acclaimed where everyone is being stupid about it, but it's like right there. If you know your games, it's right there.
It's a nice, simple experience. It's a great production. Everybody should play it.
You know what? Here, I want you to look me dead in the eyes. We're going the highest B plus possible. We're going 89. I'm wrapped on this. Are you good?
I'm good.
So thank you, everybody. This was another episode of Spooky Month. Thank you for listening, and we will catch you next time on Goddamn GameCube.